I just want you to think about this for a moment. There is an invisible war taking place. You're not going to hear about it on the news. You'll see the collateral damage on the news. You're not going to hear about the invisible war on the news. You're not going to hear it in school. You're not going to hear about it in college. You're only going to hear about it from God's Word. It appears in the third chapter of the first book of the Bible. And in what may be chronologically the oldest book of the Bible, the book of Job, it's a book entirely dedicated to the fact that there's this invisible war. And so it's something that we need to understand because it involves us. It's a war for our mind and our spirit and our soul. I want to point out a mental maneuver that people make. This is a mental maneuver that self-centered people make. They attack others rather than face the failures of themselves. This is a mental maneuver. They attack others instead of face their own failures. Okay? So, once you understand this, you'll recognize it when you see it. For example, I know somebody who used to believe in God. But his life didn't turn out the way that he wanted. And his prayers didn't get answered the way he wanted. And so now he doesn't believe in God. What's he doing? He has to blame someone. He has to attack someone rather than face his own failures. And so in this case, we're going to attack God. We're going to say that God doesn't exist. This happens over and over. And when you recognize it, you can't unsee it. Okay, you can't unsee it because it's real. It's actually happening in the book of Job. This is fascinating. It's the angels are gathered before God to give an account, okay? And here's Satan. And it's Satan that God says, "Where have you been?" And it's Satan who says, "I've been here and there, to and fro, across the earth." And it's Satan to whom God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Why didn't he ask that of the other angels? You see, God intentionally asked Satan this question. And what was Satan's response? Attack Job rather than face his own failures. Do you see that? We have to attack this. Job is a righteous man. God called him out as righteous. But Satan doesn't see it that way, because he has to attack others rather than face his own failings. And so he brings up this question. He basically accuses Job of being in it for the money. Basically, he's attacking Job's character by just saying, he's only doing this because you protect him, you give him blessings, and if you take all that away, he's just going to curse you to your face. It's fake. Job is fake. This is Satan's attack on Job's character. And so it brings up this question, would you serve God for nothing? Because that's essentially what Satan is saying. That no, you wouldn't serve God for nothing. You're only in it for yourself. That's the scenario. That's the character assassination that Satan is presenting. And so let's take a look. Would you serve God for nothing? For example, if your character was attacked. Because that's what's taking place with Job. He's a prominent man. He's really a titan of industry. If you look at how rich Job was, we're talking one of the wealthiest men of the East. Not just wealthy, but prominent. He was a wise man that sat at the city gate. He was highly esteemed for his wise counsel. He was, of course, a righteous man, a man of integrity. We saw that last week. Blameless. When you read through the book of Job, you find out he shared with the poor, he cared for strangers, he feared God, he was honest with others. He is unaware, though, that he has an enemy who's actually assassinating his character behind his back. How does that feel? How does it feel when somebody's spreading lies about you behind your back? That doesn't feel good. Satan is attacking Job's character and he's questioning Job's integrity. And remember, that's what people of the lie do. Satan is a liar. He's the father of lies. And the people of the lie attack others rather than face their own feeling, their own failures. And that's what Satan is doing here. So, would you still serve God if somebody was lying about you behind your back? That's what's happening to Job. What about if you suffered total financial ruin? Would you still serve God? He's wealthy, and of course he loses it all. And he has nothing left. Look in verse chapter 1 and verse 13. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was thus speaking, another came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Job is experiencing sudden financial collapse, sudden financial ruin. And that happens. That happens sometimes. I heard about a man who worked on Wall Street, and when the 2008 crash happened, he lost everything. It was gone in one day. In one day, it was gone. And he told the preacher, "I don't know where I'd be today if I hadn't found the Lord before that crash." Thankfully, he found the Lord before the crash. But knowing himself, he said, I don't know if I'd be here today if I hadn't found the Lord before that happened. Total financial ruin. Would you still serve God? Would you still serve God if that happened? What about if you lost your family in a tragic accident? Verse 18. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Do you see how a person's life can just change in one day? One day. Lose everything, even financial ruin, even the tragic death of all of his children. And we just don't think it would happen to us. You know? But sometimes it happens. Would you still serve God? I remember after Nadine died, Jim would sit in his car before Bible study, and he would listen to the songs that they used to listen to when they were dating and when they were, you know, married. And it would just take him back to being with her when he would listen to those songs. But he would come to Bible study and he'd worship God with tears in his eyes. He would worship with tears in his eyes. What about if you suffered severe chronic pain? Would you still serve God then? Look at chapter 2 and verse 6. "There came a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan was among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' And Satan answered and said to the Lord, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil, and still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause?' So Satan answered the Lord, saying, 'Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life.'" Have you ever heard the phrase, "He's got no skin in the game"? That's like another way of saying that it's not personal. You know, he's playing with somebody else's money or somebody else's whatever. He's got no skin in the game. And that's what Satan's saying about Job. Job's got no skin in the game. Because, yeah, you took away his riches, you took away his family, but you didn't harm him personally. You know. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life. In other words, yeah, he's got no skin in the game, you know. You killed the servants, you know, killed the kids, killed the animals, but you didn't touch him personally. That's different. And so, that's what Satan did. Verse 7, so Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, and he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. When you go through the chronic pain and suffering that Job experienced, we're talking about intense pain, peeling darkened skin, pus-filled erupting sores, which ended up with worms in them, anorexia, emaciation, fever, depression, weeping, sleeplessness, nightmares, putrid breath, difficulty breathing, failing vision, disfigured. Remember, his friends didn't even recognize him. These are old friends. Couldn't even recognize Job. Painful sores over his whole body. Intense itching, which would explain the potsherd. Condition lasted for months, not days or hours. Scrapes his sores with a potsherd that's a clay shard. People are repulsed by Job. Would you still serve God? Would you serve God with all of this happening to you? And what if you had to do it all alone? What if you had to do it all alone? Remember Job's his wife's reaction in verse 9? Then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speak. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. That's the weirdest thing about suffering, is you have to suffer alone. No one else is feeling that pain. It's just you. And that's the hardest thing about suffering. Why Satan, I think, prefers to use suffering to put a wedge between you and God is because nothing makes you feel more alone than suffering. You're the one who has to deal with it. Yeah, you got your friends, and they're going to give you their opinions on what they think you need to do. You're the one who still has to suffer. When Job's friends came to travel, I think they just made it worse. And honestly, some people think the universe is out of alignment until they give their opinion. And then somehow, when they give their opinion, the universe falls back into balance, right? Well, that's kind of how Job's friends were, right? They're going to come and straighten Job out, right? Nothing makes us feel more alone than suffering, and that's exactly what Satan wants. And on top of it all, what if you suffered tragedy and then God was silent? On top of all this, God was silent. And that may be what was so painful to Job, was that he felt like he was despised of the Lord, forsaken. And so much so that he actually cursed the day that he was born. You know, what was the point of me even being born? He felt completely alone. And the question remains, what if all of this happened? All of it. Would you still serve God? Satan afflicted Job through his finances, through his family, through his flesh, through his friends. And you and I have known people who've left the Lord for a lot less. Right? They got their feelings hurt. And they're going to blame God. because their feelings got hurt. I know that this is true about stress. One stressor is hard, but we can handle it. Two stressors, yeah, it's difficult, but we can handle it. Three stressors, that's getting on me, but I can handle it. But then four stressors, five, six, seven. Okay, now it's not so easy. Now we're ready to throw in the towel if it means taking away the pain. It's like holding a glass of water out here. You can do that for 5 minutes. But what about 25 minutes? What about 45 minutes? What about 2 hours? What about 2 days? What about 2 weeks? You see, it just keeps piling on and piling on. How are we going to endure suffering and still serve God? How do we do that? I think we're going to learn from Job how to do that. And next week, we'll look at some life lessons that we can gain from the book of Job. But let's remember, number one, that God is in control. And you see that in the book of Job. Remember, it's the angels who gather together to give an account to God. They're not giving an account to Satan. They're not giving an account to themselves. They give account to God. God asks them what they're doing, and they have to give account. So it's God who's in control. It's God who points out the righteousness of Job, and it's Satan who God allows to question the integrity of Job, but he has to ask permission. When you look at the text, Satan has to ask permission to afflict Job, and God puts borders on him. Yeah, you can take away, but you can't touch his body. Or now, round two, you can afflict his body, but you can't take his life. Do you see how God is in control? He sets those boundaries. And even Satan has to abide by that. And you see that in the New Testament. Jesus said to Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. Once again, God is in control. Satan has to ask in that case. But even in his suffering, Job never forgot that God is in charge. The Lord gives and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That was his answer. So he understood that God was in control regardless of whether it made sense to him. And even with all the trials and the selfishness in this world, even though the foundations are crumbling all around us, even though there's a spirit of darkness, there's a godless agenda that's spreading, even though all of that is true, God is still in control. And number one, we have to remember that. And number two, remember that we have an enemy. We have an enemy, and that's what Job didn't know. We know that from the book. Job never knew that. Job's friends didn't know that. And if they had known that this was a satanic attack, their advice would have been different. Their interpretation would have been different, right? They didn't know. And yet we do, because we have the book of Job. This is not God afflicting Job. Satan is afflicting Job. This is God pointing out the righteousness of Job. But when you think about the cases of demonic possession in the New Testament, it never works out well for the person who's possessed. So they're cutting, right? They're cutting their skin. They're bound with chains. They're in torment. They're crying out. This is what happens when Satan gets a hold of somebody. But when Jesus casts out those demons, suddenly they're clothed and in their right mind. Suddenly they have peace. And it shows you a picture. One picture is what Satan wants to do to you. He wants to afflict you, even to the point of taking away your sanity. But then there's what the Lord wants to do. He wants to free you. He wants to set you free. He wants you clothed and in your right mind. He wants to give you peace. So, people of the lie attack others rather than face their own failures. And you have to understand that in order to understand what's going on here with Satan and Job. So many blame God because it's easier to blame God than themselves. I can't take blame here. I got to blame somebody. I'll just blame God. Right? This is God's fault. Okay, well, that's what Job's friends, in a sense, were saying. Job, you did something, and God is punishing you. And they were wrong. They were wrong. But third, remember to care about the souls of others. If we're going to get through suffering like Job, we have to remember to care about the souls of others. Do you remember Job's kids? They liked to party. And when you read about Job's kids, you know, what's mentioned is they like to drink wine and eat, feast in the brother's house, and then in the sister's house, and they would go from house to house just partying. Job was so concerned about that that he offered sacrifice for his kids because he was afraid that maybe they had sinned in their heart and he didn't want them to lose their soul. And so Job was rich, but he also understood the traps, right, that come with riches. And he understood the dangers. And he had the wisdom to recognize that just partying was not safe for them. So he would offer sacrifice after their feasting and drinking. He would offer sacrifice for their souls. And it was like parents today, we would intercede through prayer for our kids, right? In that time, he interceded through sacrifice. Today, we would intercede, as parents, we would intercede for our kids with prayer. You know, Lord, protect them. Give them wisdom. Well, Job felt a responsibility for the souls of others, but when suffering hits us, everything changes, right? When suffering hits us, now we're not so concerned about everybody else. Now, you know, I don't care who gets hurt as long as I get some relief here, right? So, a husband, he's in an unhappy marriage. Who cares about the kids at this point? Who cares about the vow at this point? I want some relief. I want out. And so he has an affair, right? Because he's suffering, and that makes it okay, right? The wife, she's in an unhappy marriage. Who cares about the kids? Who cares about the vow or the family? If mom is not happy, nobody's happy, right? Isn't that what we say? Except in this case, if mama's not happy, now mama's going to go get a different daddy. And now mommy's going to go get different kids and a different family and a different life. Because when suffering hits, now we don't care about other people. Now it's about me. I need relief. And so in order to get through suffering, we have to care about the souls of other people. Suffering sometimes brings out the best in us. Sometimes it brings out the selfishness in us. And that's what Satan is betting on. You remember Psalms 73, there's a man named Asaph, and he is suffering. He has, some people believe he has some form of illness, some form of physical malady, and he's suffering, and it's making him bitter. It's making him bitter because he's looking at the wicked, and he's saying, they're having a great time. But when he looks at himself, he's suffering. And he's like, this isn't right. How can the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer? And he gets bitter about it. He gets so bitter about it that, thankfully, he took it to God. He went to God with it. And he said, when I entered into the sanctuary of the temple, then I understood. He said he then saw a bigger perspective. He saw the end of the wicked, that it's not all good times for the wicked, and that they actually will have a terrible fall at the end. But this is his recollection. If I had spoken out like that when he was bitter, if I had spoken out like that, I would have betrayed your children. In the New King James, I would have betrayed your people. In other words, if he had spoken out in his, I hate the world, And I'm going to take it out on God. If he had spoken out what he truly felt inside, he would have betrayed God's people falsely. I mean, he would have accused God, and he would have betrayed God's people. And once again, sometimes we would rather attack than look at the failures within. So don't use your suffering as an excuse to be selfish. Don't cause others to lose their faith. And remember that adversity is a reminder of how much we need God. It's a reminder of how much we need God, not how much we should blame God. When Job's wife told him to just curse God and die, he said, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Whether she realized it or not, she was basically playing right into what Satan wanted. She was recommending that Job curse God and die, which is exactly what Satan said would happen. Take everything away from him and he'll just curse you to your face. So she was giving him the worst possible advice, but she was hurting too. Those were her kids too, right? She was financially ruined as well. So she was hurting just like Job, except without the chronic pain, the physical chronic pain. Job was a titan of industry. He was the wealthiest, most influential man of his time in the East. But he also knew that God gives and God takes away. And that's God. He is sovereign. He's in control. Job realized that he was dependent on God for every gift, including his life. There was another titan of industry, a wealthy man who was a geopolitical leader. His name was Solomon. And he said it this way: "In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him." Or in the NIV, "Therefore, no one can discover anything about their future." Meaning, there's going to be days of adversity. There's going to also be days of prosperity. And you don't know the future. You don't know what's coming down the pike. And we don't. Maybe there's going to be another lockdown, right? Maybe there's going to be another COVID lockdown. Maybe there'll be another variant, and then another variant, and then another variant. You don't know the future. And in the day of adversity, consider. I really think that the time of COVID has been a time to consider, if you think about it. Because people are coming face to face with their mortality, maybe for the first time. And they weren't expecting that. Okay, that's why you get such a range of emotions through COVID. People didn't look in the mirror face to face with the possibility of death, some of them until COVID hit, right? So this is a time to consider. In the time of prosperity, be joyful, but in the time of adversity, consider that God has appointed the one as well as the other. There's going to be years of plenty. There's going to be years of famine, days of prosperity, days of adversity, a time to mourn and a time to laugh, a time to be joyful and a time to consider. And Moses says, "Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And I would say, lastly, remember your suffering in light of his suffering for you. Remember, Jesus suffered for us. He gave up the riches of heaven, not to be born in a palace, but a manger, not to display his divine privileges, but to lay them aside, not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. And we were talking about it Wednesday night, and we were talking about how a king once used to leave the palace, and he would walk incognito among the common people. And his advisors feared for his safety, and they said, you can't do that. You know, it's not safe for you to do that. And he said, how can I rule my people if I don't know how they live? Well, we talked about it Wednesday night, that Moses, when he saw the suffering of his people, he could no longer stay in the palace, right? He left the palace to go be with his people. And when Jesus considered the suffering of his people, he couldn't leave, he couldn't stay in the palace. He actually left heaven. He actually came to earth to be born in human form, to suffer like we suffer, to be tempted like we are tempted. He could no longer remain in the palace. He needed to be with his people in order to free us from the bondage that we were in. And that's what makes Jesus different than any of the other religious leaders people try to follow. Jesus came from heaven to earth to give his life for you, to suffer for you, to become like you, and to become a perfect and high priest. And we read, inasmuch then as children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. What's been taking place over the last year and a half? What's been driving a global lockdown? The fear of death. The fear of death. That's what's going to drive the lockdowns. That's what's going to drive the next lockdown. That's what's going to drive the fear of the next variant and the variant after that. The fear of death. It's real. It is real. Right? And people don't know how to handle it. And yet Jesus came in flesh and blood so that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. And he set us free from that so that we could live for him. So, do we serve God for who he is? Or do we serve God for what we get out of it? Would we serve God for nothing? Just for who he is? Would we serve him for who he is? Because he is God. Because of his great love and concern for us. Job declared, I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. And after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another, how my heart yearns within me. He came to the place where he realized, I just can't do this without God. I need my Redeemer, and I know he will save me. And that is the case with us. I know that the fear of death is real, and I know that we all have to die, and I'd rather make that the last thing I do, you know? So it's something that we think about. But see, Jesus redeemed us. He redeemed us by his blood, and now we can live for him. And we can know that we have an inheritance that can't be taken away from us. And it wasn't because we're so perfect, you know, or we're so flawless. No, it's because of what Jesus did for us. He paid our debt in full at the cross. And so this is something that Job came to understand, and I really feel, we'll conclude it next week, but I really feel like Job proved that a human being, a man, a righteous man, can be faithful to God under the worst possible circumstances, when Satan couldn't be faithful to God even under the best circumstances. I really believe that's why the book of Job is there for us. It's a testimony. It's a testimony to Job's faith. It's a testimony to the narcissism of Satan. But it's a testimony to us of how we can overcome by faith. If we can help in any way, please let it be known as we stand and sing.